You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science, this week we are joined once again, the return of Professor Alan Blackman. How's your, I guess, afternoon now going?
It's going okay, I guess. Got a lecture later on this afternoon, so
exciting stuff. Yeah. And we've got a bit of a special Dear Science going on today.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Got lots of exciting stuff planned here with the anniversary. Well, I mean, it's pretty exciting to me at least. The anniversary of the discovery of oxygen.
Yeah, I reckon this is worth a full section of Dear Science because
yeah, certainly.
250 years ago on August the 1st, this guy that we're going to be talking about did an experiment and we found oxygen from that basically. So
yeah, incredible.
We are going to talk oxygen for the whole time.
Mm.
And I guess we're going to kick off by probably looking at an experiment that pretty much every kid in the country has probably done at one stage or another. So I would say that probably everyone in their youth has taken a candle and put a glass over it and watched the candle go out.
Classic stuff.
And wondered, that's interesting. Why does that go out? Or they've caught a bug in a jar and they put the lid on really tight and then in the morning they wonder why the bug's not alive anymore.
A little bit less exciting than the candle.
Yeah. So I think probably most kids in the country have done that. And those two little experiments show how important oxygen is, I guess. And it seems difficult for us to believe that there was a time that we didn't know what oxygen was and that it's as recently as 250 years ago, really, which, you know, in human terms is not really all that long.
No, yeah.
And so we're going to talk about Joseph Priestley today. And he was a remarkable guy in more ways than one.
Mm.
He was what we call a polymath, or what used to be called a polymath. So years and years and years ago, sort of a couple hundred years ago, it possibly was, you were able almost to know pretty much everything, or at least something about everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there was a lot less everything that people knew. Okay,
that's so quite funny.
We knew a lot less, and so people could be versed in proportionally a hell of a lot more about everything. So this guy, Joseph Priestley, so, you know, just to kick off, he taught himself Latin, Greek, Italian, German, French, and some Middle Eastern languages, quote-unquote. Yeah, okay. And you'd think, okay, wow, this guy's good. He's a
linguist.
He's got the makings of somebody who's going to go to university.
Mm.
So, wasn't allowed to go to Oxford or Cambridge.
Oh.
Because he wasn't C of E. Wasn't Church of England.
Right.
Okay,
that makes sense.
He wasn't an Anglican.
250 years ago,
so that made all the difference. So in order to go to Oxford or Cambridge, you had to be an Anglican. And he wasn't. He had some unorthodox religious views. And so he went to another sort of place of learning. Wasn't Oxford or Cambridge, but, you know, went there and everything. And obviously got well enough known that he was asked by none other than Captain James Cook.
Oh, the historically significant. Many children should also know his name. I don't.
He was asked by Captain Cook to be his science advisor on his second voyage out here in these parts.
Oh.
And so he said, yes, let's do that. And then along came the good old C of E, the Anglican Church, and said, no, we can't have that because he's not a real Anglican.
But he almost came here.
He almost came
basically
here.
Basically a New Zealand citizen. We can claim that accomplishment now.
And so his offer of place, shall we say, was rescinded, unfortunately. Otherwise, he might have found his life going in a very, very, very different direction had he come with Cook on his second voyage. So August the 1st, 1774, was a big day. It's a massive day, really. And he did, this is Priestley, did a little experiment. And, you know, really, technically speaking, it was a little experiment. It's not, you know, wasn't using massive paraphernalia and stuff like that, all this, you know, expensive stuff. It was pretty simple. He just got a big old glass lens, and he focused sunlight onto a sample of a thing called mercuric oxide, which is a red solid.
Mm.
And that was sitting in a pool of mercury, and then he would have a glass bell over that, and the mercury ensured that everything inside was contained inside. Okay. And what he then did, as I said, he focused the sun's rays on this mercuric oxide.
Similar to as you would imagine children doing with ants?
Oh, yes. Yes. Very right. Similar. Yes, there's same another, process. Another experiment that all the kids have done. Yes, yes. And what he then did was to sort of, well, he noted that there was a gas that was evolved.
Hmm.
And so he was sort of figuring out, oh, this looks interesting. What's this gas that's evolved? And so he sort of played around with it, did the odd experiment or two, and he found that, quote, it was 5 to 6 times as good as common air.
Mm.
And how did he come to those particular numbers? Well, again, he did that good old experiment that all the kiddies have done. Right. So he got a mouse.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it must have been a couple of mice, actually.
Yeah.
And put it in a good old sealed container and right. found that it died. If he filled the sealed container with this new gas that had been evolved, he found that the mouse lasted about 4 times as long.
Yeah, poor mouse.
I know. And then he tried breathing it himself, of course, because obviously there were some life-giving properties of this stuff from the second mouse. And again, I quote, the feeling of it in my lungs was not sensibly different from that of common air, but I fancied that my breast felt particularly light and easy for some time afterwards. Who can tell but that in time this pure air may become a fashionable article in luxury? Oh. Hitherto, only 2 mice and myself have had the privilege of breathing it.
That's good stuff.
Which is a very, very nice last line. Had he only known, everybody had had the privilege of breathing
it.
Yeah,
a bit unfortunate.
And so basically, you know, sort of what he was showing is that this stuff that's all around us, this air that's all around us, he was basically showing that there's more than one component to it. This is one of the big sort of take-home lessons, I guess, from this particular experiment, that air is just not itself a pure substance, that it's in fact a mixture.
Mm.
And what he had then sort of figured out was, this mixture contains something that supports combustion, because again, he went and did that experiment, with the old candle and the bell and everything.
Stuff.
And if you fill it with oxygen, yes, the candle goes not only longer, but brighter, it really, really supports combustion. And the whole mouse in the sealed, chamber thing. So that was, he showed that. And crucially, and this, bit of a stroke of genius here, he found that you could reverse the whole mouse thing if you put a green plant in there and shone sunlight on that green plant.
Right. He's looking
and
at
then
photosynthesis.
He figured out, oh, yes, he was. He didn't know it, but he was. So he was looking at photosynthesis and looking at plants evolving oxygen, which every school kid now knows that's what photosynthesis is, You take in water and carbon dioxide and you generate carbohydrates and oxygen. And so, this is a massive, massive, massive discovery, which is why it's worth talking about 250 years ago or 250 years hence, I guess. And so the interesting thing, another interesting thing, it's all interesting stuff. So this was 1774. Now, there was a guy named Scheele, who the year before had made exactly the same observations.
Ooh.
So he'd done exactly the same thing.
Right.
1773. But what he didn't do was publish his observations.
Oh.
And this is the big thing in science. There's no prizes for being second.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And it's not being first to actually do it. It's being first into print. It's being first to publish. And so Scheele, as I said, he did his work a year before good old Priestley, but he didn't publish it until 1777.
Mm.
And Priestley basically got in, and he's the one that is now sort of lauded as the discoverer of oxygen. So, and then another French guy who you've probably heard of, Lavoisier? No.
I'm not in
the
science.
Lavoisier?
Not in the world of science, unfortunately.
So Lavoisier carried on the work of Priestley, and basically one of the things he did was actually give the stuff a name. So he called it oxygen in French. And that came from the Greek for acid producer, because he sort of figured out that oxygen was a component of acids, and so you needed oxygen to make acids and stuff.
A few other things there as well.
Indeed. So good old Priestley could have sort of rested on his laurels at this stage, but he kept on working and stuff and everything. And this was the age of revolution. So we had 1776, we had the American Revolution, and 1789, you had the French Revolution, and he was a big supporter of both of those, which probably wasn't, you know, the best thing to be in good old monarchy England. And he also, as I said, had some very unorthodox religious views. And so he made himself quite unpopular with the populace over there. Mm. And so they decided to burn his house down.
Oh.
Which was
well,
not the best.
Well, discoverer of oxygen.
Plus, yes, indeed, the irony, yes. And so he thought, oh, yeah, this isn't good. And so he jumped... he got out of Dodge, basically, and literally went over to the other side of the Atlantic and ended his days in America. So, which is a little bit sad, really. And what he did over in America, he founded the Unitarian Church. So I know nothing about the Unitarian Church.
No, nor
but
I.
Apparently it's something to do with not believing in the Trinity, you know, the Big Daddy, the you know, the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, all that sort of stuff. So he ended his life, you know, being well known for that great discovery.
Wow,
so,
a man of several spheres.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about oxygen itself, because it's got a lot of interesting products. So a lot of interesting properties, sorry. And in fact, it's the most abundant element in the Earth's crust by weight. Okay, so there's more oxygen. So we think of oxygen as being a gas.
Yep.
That's your initial thought. Oxygen, it's a gas. Yep, it is, but there's a whole lot of oxygen compounds in the Earth's crust.
Right.
And that's because pretty much every element reacts with oxygen, because it's really, really seriously reactive stuff. And pretty much every metal, well, most metals certainly react with oxygen, which is why we don't get things like, let's say, aluminium, important metals like aluminium, or iron, just to mention two biggies, they always occur in combination with oxygen. They always occur as what we call their oxides.
Right, iron oxide.
Right,
yeah.
And aluminium oxide or alumina or bauxite. And so that's why we can't find aluminium or aluminium in its metallic state on Earth. And it's why we can't find iron in its metallic state on Earth.
Right.
Because they both react with oxygen. So we have to use heaps and heaps and heaps of energy to recover iron and aluminium from their oxides. Now, on the other hand, something like gold, we do get gold.
Yep.
Okay. So gold's not so reactive. We do get copper. We can get copper, platinum. So things like that, and we call these the precious metals because they don't react with oxygen. They don't tarnish so much. Silver, those sorts of things, okay? And oxygen, as the name suggests, it's a good oxidizing agent. That's a reaction that it likes to undergo is oxidation, and that's where the name oxidation comes from. It's a reaction of oxygen. And in doing so, what oxygen does is it accepts some electrons, it takes some electrons off things, and it gets what we call reduced.
Yep.
And turns into water. Okay.
Mm.
And so what else about oxygen? So, yeah, we think of oxygen as being a gas, as I said. If you cool it down, if you go to negative 183 degrees Celsius.
Very cold.
It's a bit chilly.
Almost the coldest, right?
you've got a wee way to go then. You get a thing called liquid oxygen.
Yes.
And liquid oxygen is a very pale blue colour.
I've always wanted to see liquid. I will confess, that's one of my... Like, I've always wondered, what does liquid oxygen look like?
We could do a demo.
I swear.
It wouldn't be good for people on the radio.
I'm sure I remember, like, 2010's YouTube, there were videos of people trying liquid oxygen. Like, they would actually consume pure oxygen in some form. It was, like, a trend.
Yeah, it would burn you. That wouldn't
that,
be the
yeah,
best.
Yeah, that sounds
it
pretty unsafe.
Wouldn't be a sensible thing to do. But the thing about liquid oxygen, so gaseous oxygen does support combustion. Liquid oxygen, oh boy, because it's a liquid, it supports combustion even more. Even more. So, again, yes, if you do look on YouTube, you'll see crazy things like people pouring liquid oxygen onto a barbecue and stuff like that. And there's no barbecue at the end of it. It's just gone.
Yeah, right. Same sort of thing as, like, that's, I'm guessing, why we'd get, like, you could get an oxygen engine maybe out of that.
How did you know I was going there? Because oxygen was used as a propellant in the V2. So this was the first liquid powered rocket, and that was used in the V2, and it's still used in many of the rockets that are used to launch satellites and stuff today.
Yeah, right.
And so it is mixed with something like, let's say, liquid hydrogen. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near that.
Right.
Or methane, or anything that's very, very sort of oxidizable, and it's extraordinarily reactive.
Is there a reason why we hear more about things like hydrogen engines than oxygen engines, or is it just because they're the same?
Well, they need oxygen. That's the vital component. You need oxygen for an oxidation reaction, essentially. Yep. And so it's the other component that's going to be the important
thing.
Working out what the
it's
other
like
component
is. It's
like
calling it an engine.
Okay. So that's one of its very, very important uses. You do see, again, if you have a look on the web and stuff like that, you'll see all of this nonsense like oxygenated water or active oxygen or stuff like that. Just delete it, or just, I don't know, report it or something like that, because it's all rubbish. Keep away from anything that sort of promises you that, oh, this water's got extra oxygen in it. No, it doesn't.
How would you even do that?
Well, you could pressurize it up. You could do that, but as soon as you let the pressure off, then all of
right.
that. And there was a thing called oxygen bars. Now, they were a thing a while
That's
ago.
What I was thinking
yeah,
of.
Yeah. Oxygen bars. So
how does that
you'd
work?
Go in there and you'd be sniffing like 40% oxygen and stuff like that. Now, it's not dangerous, but it's not absolutely recommended. And in fact, people have done studies, and they reckon that if you are sort of inhaling oxygen, it's twice at roughly 2.5 times the concentration in the air.
Yep.
So in other words, if the air was 50% oxygen, you do that for about 16 hours, you're gone.
Okay. Right.
Too much of a good
thing.
Not
too great.
It is dangerous.
Because I remember, you know, as a naive child, I used to go, why don't they fill the scuba tanks just with 100% oxygen?
Yep.
That, I'm guessing, would kill you.
Yep. Well, again, for a prolonged period, it would.
Right.
Okay. So obviously, you can do it if you're up Everest or somewhere like that. But again, you want to make sure it's mixed with other gases and everything, so it's not very, very, very high concentration. So you've got to be careful. It is very, very good for you. You know, obviously, it supports life and everything. And again, these amazing molecules called hemoglobin and myoglobin in our bodies, and they carry the oxygen around to where it's meant to be, and then they release it, and that the chemistry behind that is just astonishing. I haven't got time, folks, come to one of my lectures, but it's just amazing how this all works. So oxygen, I could go on, I'm not going to, but it's a remarkable thing. And 250 years ago, on August the 1st, last Friday or Saturday,
I'm checking right now. Oh. Hold on, hold please. Oh. It was last Thursday.
Last Thursday. Okay, last Thursday. That's when the crucial experiment was done by Joseph Priestley. So there you go. You can all stop and have a think about this guy.
Tell your friend, tell your mother, tell your neighbour.
Thank you, Joseph Priestley. We're sorry your house got burnt down.
Yeah. All right. And with that, we'll be celebrating here. But thank you, Ellen, for coming in. Thank you, Mojat. And thank you, as always, Science. We'll be right back after this very short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.